at the great noontide. Thus spake Zarathustra. Second part. And only when ye have all denied me will I return unto you. Verily, with other eyes, my brethren, shall I then seek my lost ones. With another love shall I then love you. Zarathustra 1. The Bestowing Virtue. 23. The Child with the Mirror. After this, Zarathustra returned again into the mountains to the solitude of his cave, and withdrew himself from men, waiting like a sower who hath scattered his seed. His soul, however, became impatient and full of longing for those whom he loved, because he had still much to give them. For this is hardest of all, to close the open hand out of love, and keep modest as a giver. Thus passed, with the lonesome one, months and years. His wisdom meanwhile increased, and caused him pain by its abundance. One morning, however, he awoke ere the rosy dawn, and having meditated long on his couch, at last spake thus to his heart. Why did I startle in my dream so that I awoke? Did not a child come to me carrying a mirror? O Zarathustra, said the child unto me, look at thyself in the mirror. But when I looked into the mirror I shrieked, and my heart throbbed, for not myself did I see therein, but a devil's grimace and derision. Verily all too well do I understand the dream's portent and monition. My doctrine is in danger. Tares want to be called wheat. Mine enemies have grown powerful and have disfigured the likeness of my doctrine, so that my dearest ones have to blush for the gifts that I gave them. Lost are my friends. The hour hath come for me to seek my lost ones. With these words Zarathustra started up, not, however, like a person in anguish, seeking relief, but rather like a seer and a singer whom the Spirit inspireth. With amazement did his eagle and serpent gaze upon him, for a coming bliss overspread his countenance like the rosy dawn. What hath happened unto me, mine animals, said Zarathustra, am I not transformed? Hath not bliss come unto me like a whirlwind? Foolish is my happiness, and foolish things will it speak. It is still too young, so have patience with it. Wounded am I by my happiness, all sufferers shall be physicians unto me. To my friends can I again go down, and also to mine enemies. Zarathustra can again speak and bestow, and show his best love to his loved ones. My impatient love overfloweth in streams, down towards sunrise and sunset. Out of silent mountains and storms of affliction rusheth my soul into the valleys. Too long have I longed and looked into the distance. Too long hath solitude possessed me. Thus have I unlearned to keep silence. Utterance have I become altogether, and the brawling of a brook from high rocks. Downward into the valleys will I hurl my speech. And let the stream of my love sweep into unfrequented channels. How should a stream not finally find its way to the sea? Forsooth, there is a lake in me, sequestered and self-sufficing, but the stream of my love beareth this along with it, down to the sea. New paths do I tread, a new speech cometh unto me. Tired have I become, like all creators of the old tongues. No longer will my spirit walk on worn-out souls. Too slowly runneth all, speaking for me. Into thy chariot, O storm, do I leap, and even thee will I whip with my spite. Like a cry and an huzzah will I traverse wide seas, till I find the happy isles where my friends sojourn, and mine enemies amongst them. How I now love every one unto whom I may but speak. Even mine enemies pertain to my bliss. And when I want to mount my wildest horse, then doth my spear always help me up best. It is my foot's ever-ready servant. The spear which I hurl at mine enemies, how grateful am I to my enemies that I may at last hurl it. Too great hath been the tension of my cloud. Twixt laughters of lightnings will I cast hail showers into the depths. Violently will my breast then heave, violently will it blow its storm over the mountains, Thus cometh its assuagement. Verily, like a storm cometh my happiness and my freedom, but mine enemy shall think that the evil one roareth over their heads. Yea, ye also, my friends, will be alarmed by my wild wisdom, and perhaps ye will flee therefrom, along with mine enemies. Ah, that I knew how to lure you back with shepherd's flutes! Ah, that my lioness wisdom would learn to roar softly! And much have we already learned with one another. My wild wisdom became pregnant on the lonesome mountains, on the rough stones did she bear the youngest of her young. Now runneth she foolishly in the arid wilderness, and seeketh the soft sward, mine old wild wisdom. On the soft sward of your hearts, my friends, on your love would she fain couch her dearest one. Thus spake Zarathustra. 24. In the Happy Isles. The figs fall from the trees, they are good and sweet, and in falling the red skins of them break. A north wind am I to ripe figs. Thus, like figs, do these doctrines fall for you, my friends. Imbibe now their juice and their sweet substance. It is autumn all around, and clear sky and afternoon. Lo, what fullness is around us! And out of the midst of superabundance, it is delightful to look out upon distant seas. Once did people say God when they looked out upon distant seas. Now, however, have I taught you to say Superman. God is a conjecture, but I do not wish your conjecturing to reach beyond your creating will. Could ye create a god? Then I pray you be silent about all gods, but ye could well create the Superman. Not perhaps ye yourselves, my brethren, but into fathers and forefathers of the Superman could ye transform yourselves, and let that be your best creating. God is a conjecture, but I should like your conjecturing restricted to the conceivable. Could ye conceive a god? But let this mean will to truth unto you, that everything be transformed into the humanly conceivable, the humanly visible, the humanly sensible. Your own discernment shall ye follow out to the end. And what ye have called the world shall but be created by you. Your reason, your likeness, your will, your love, shall it itself become. And verily for your bliss, ye discerning ones. And how would ye endure life without that hope, ye discerning ones? Neither in the inconceivable could ye have been born, nor in the irrational. But that I may reveal my heart entirely unto you, my friends, if there were gods, how could I endure it to be no god? Therefore there are no gods. Yea, I have drawn the conclusion. Now, however, doth it draw me. God is a conjecture, but who could drink all the bitterness of this conjecture without dying? Shall his faith be taken from the creating one, and from the eagle his flights into eagle heights? God is a thought. It maketh all the straight crooked, and all that standeth real. What? Time would be gone, and all the perishable would be but a lie? To think this is giddiness and vertigo to human limbs, and even vomiting to the stomach. Verily, the reeling sickness do I call it, to conjecture such a thing. Evil do I call it, and misanthropic. All that teaching about the one, and the plenum, and the unmoved, and the sufficient, and the imperishable. All the imperishable, that's but a simile, and the poets lie too much. But of time and of becoming shall the best simile speak, a praise shall they be, and a justification of all perishableness. Creating, that is the great salvation from suffering and life's alleviation. But for the Creator to appear, suffering itself is needed, and much transformation. Yea, much bitter dying must there be in your life, ye creators. Thus are ye advocates and justifiers of all perishableness. For the Creator himself to be the new-born child, he must also be willing to be the child-bearer, and endure the pangs of the child-bearer. Verily, Through 100 souls went I my way, and through 100 cradles and birth throes. Many a farewell have I taken. I know the heart-breaking last hours. But so willeth it my creating will, my fate, or, to tell you it more candidly, just such a fate willeth my will. All feeling suffereth in me, and is in prison, but my willing ever cometh to me as mine emancipator and comforter. Willing emancipateth. That is the true doctrine of will and emancipation, so teacheth you Zarathustra. No longer willing, and no longer valuing, and no longer creating, ah, that great debility may ever be far from me. And also in discerning do I feel only my will's procreating and evolving delight, and if there be innocence in my knowledge, it is because there is will to procreation in it. Away from God and gods did this will allure me. What would there be to create if there were gods? But to man doth it ever impel me anew, my fervent creative will. Thus impelleth it the hammer to the stone. Ah, ye men, within the stone slumbereth an image for me, the image of my visions. Ah, that it should slumber in the hardest, ugliest stone. Now rageth my hammer ruthlessly against its prison. From the stone fly the fragments. What's that to me? I will complete it, for a shadow came unto me. The stillest and lightest of all things once came unto me. The beauty of the Superman came unto me as a shadow. Ah, my brethren, of what account now are the gods to me? Thus spake Zarathustra. 25. The Pitiful. My friends, there hath arisen a satire on your friend. Behold, Zarathustra, walketh he not amongst us as if amongst animals? But it is better said in this wise, the discerning one walketh amongst men as amongst animals. Man himself is to the discerning one, the animal with red cheeks. How hath that happened unto him? Is it not because he hath had to be ashamed too oft? Oh, my friends, thus speaketh the discerning one. Shame, 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 that is the history of man. And on that account doth the noble one enjoin upon himself not to abash. Bashfulness doth he enjoin on himself in presence of all sufferers. Verily I like them not, the merciful ones, whose bliss is in their pity. Too destitute are they of bashfulness. If I must be pitiful, I dislike to be called so, and if I be so, it is preferably at a distance. Preferably also do I shroud my head and flee before being recognized, and thus do I bid you do, my friends. May my destiny ever lead unafflicted ones like you across my path, and those with whom I may have hope and repast and honey in common. Verily I have done this and that for the afflicted, but something better did I always seem to do when I had learned to enjoy myself better. Since humanity came into being, man hath enjoyed himself too little. That alone, my brethren, is our original sin. And when we learn better to enjoy ourselves, then do we unlearn best to give pain unto others and to contrive pain. Therefore do I wash the hand that hath helped the sufferer, therefore do I wipe also my soul. For in seeing the sufferer suffering, thereof was I ashamed on account of his shame, and in helping him sorely did I wound his pride. Great obligations do not make grateful, but revengeful, and when a small kindness is not forgotten, it becometh a gnawing worm. Be shy in accepting, distinguish by accepting. Thus do I advise those who have naught to bestow. I, however, am a bestower. Willingly do I bestow as friend to friends. Strangers, however, and the poor may pluck for themselves the fruit from my tree. Thus doth it cause less shame. Beggars, however, one should entirely do away with. Verily, it annoyeth one to give unto them, and it annoyeth one not to give unto them. And likewise sinners and bad consciences. Believe me, my friends, The sting of conscience teacheth one to sting. The worst things, however, are the petty thoughts. Verily, better to have done evilly than to have thought pettily. To be sure, ye say, the delight in petty evils spareth one many a great evil deed. But here one should not wish to be sparing. Like a boil is the evil deed. It itcheth, and irritateth, and breaketh forth. It speaketh honourably. Behold, I am disease, saith the evil deed. That is its honourableness. But like infection is the petty thought. It creepeth and hideth, and wanteth to be nowhere, until the whole body is decayed and withered by the petty infection. To him, however, who is possessed of a devil, I would whisper this word in the ear. Better for thee to rear up thy devil. Even for thee there is still a path to greatness. Ah, my brethren, one knoweth a little too much about everyone, and many a one becometh transparent to us, but still we can by no means penetrate him. It is difficult to live among men because silence is so difficult. And not to him who is offensive to us are we most unfair, but to him who doth not concern us at all. If, however, thou hast a suffering friend, then be a resting place for his suffering, like a hard bed, however, a camp bed. Thus wilt thou serve him best. And if a friend doeth thee wrong, then say, I forgive thee what thou hast done unto me. That thou hast done it unto thyself, however, how could I forgive that? Thus speaketh all great love. It surpasseth even forgiveness and pity. One should hold fast one's heart, for when one letteth it go, how quickly doth one's head run away. Ah, where in the world have there been greater follies than with the pitiful? And what in the world hath caused more suffering than the follies of the pitiful? Woe unto all loving ones who have not an elevation which is above their pity. Thus spake the devil unto me once on a time. Even God hath his hell. It is his love for man. And lately did I hear him say these words, God is dead. Of his pity for man hath God died. So be ye warned against pity. From thence there yet cometh unto men a heavy cloud. Verily I understand weather signs. But attend also to this word. All great love is above all its pity, for it seeketh to create what is loved. Myself do I offer unto my love, and my neighbour as myself. Such is the language of all creators. All creators, however, are hard. Thus spake Zarathustra. 26. The Priests. And one day Zarathustra made a sign to his disciples, and spake these words unto them. Here are priests, but although they are mine enemies, pass them quietly and with sleeping swords. Even among them there are heroes. Many of them have suffered too much, so they want to make others suffer. Bad enemies are they. Nothing is more revengeful than their meekness, and readily doth he soil himself who toucheth them. But my blood is related to theirs, and I want withal to see my blood honoured in theirs. And when they had passed, a pain attacked Zarathustra, but not long had he struggled with the pain when he began to speak thus, It moveth my heart for those priests. They also go against my taste, but that is the smallest matter unto me, since I am among men. But I suffer and have suffered with them. Prisoners are they unto me, and stigmatized ones. He whom they call Saviour put them in fetters. In fetters of false values and fatuous words. Oh, that someone would save them from their Saviour. On an isle they once thought they had landed, when the sea tossed them about, but behold, it was a slumbering monster. False values and fatuous words. These are the worst monsters for mortals. Long slumbereth and waiteth the fate that is in them. But at last it cometh and awaketh, and devoureth and engulfeth whatever hath built tabernacles upon it. Oh, just look at those tabernacles which those priests have built themselves. churches they called their sweet-smelling caves. Oh, that falsified light, that mustified air, where the soul may not fly aloft to its height, but so enjoineth their belief, on your knees, up the stair, ye sinners. Verily, rather would I see a shameless one than the distorted eyes of their shame and devotion. Who created for themselves such caves and penitent stairs? Was it not those who sought to conceal themselves and were ashamed under the clear sky? And only when the clear sky looketh again through ruined roofs, and down upon grass and red poppies on ruined walls, will I again turn my heart to the seats of this God. They call God that which opposed and afflicted them, and verily there was much hero spirit in their worship. And they knew not how to love their God, otherwise than by nailing men to the cross. As corpses they thought to live. In black draped they their corpses, even in their talk do I still feel the evil flavour of charnel houses. And he who liveth nigh unto them liveth nigh unto black pools, wherein the toad singeth his song with sweet gravity. Better songs would they have to sing for me to believe in their Saviour. More like saved ones would his disciples have to appear unto me. Naked would I like to see them, for beauty alone should preach penitence. But whom would that disguised affliction convince? Verily their saviours themselves came not from freedom and freedom's seventh heaven. Verily they themselves never trod the carpets of knowledge. Of defects did the spirit of those saviours consist, but into every defect had they put their illusion, their stopgap, which they called God. In their pity was their spirit drowned, and when they swelled and o'erswelled with pity, there always floated to the surface a great folly. Eagerly and with shouts drove they their flock over their footbridge, as if there were but one footbridge to the future. Verily those shepherds also were still of the flock. Small spirits and spacious souls had those shepherds, but, my brethren, what small domains have even the most spacious souls hitherto been? Characters of blood did they write on the way they went, and their folly taught that truth is proved by blood. But blood is the very worst witness to truth. Blood tainteth the purest teaching, and turneth it into delusion and hatred of heart. And when a person goeth through fire for his teaching, what doth that prove? It is more, verily, when out of one's own burning cometh one's own teaching. Sultry heart and cold head, where these meet, there ariseth the blusterer, the saviour. Greater ones verily have there been, and higher born ones, than those whom the people call saviours, those rapturous blusterers. And by still greater ones than any of the saviours must ye be saved, my brethren, if ye would find the way to freedom. Never yet hath there been a superman. Naked have I seen both of them, the greatest man and the smallest man. All too similar are they still to each other. Verily, even the greatest found I all too human. Thus spake Zarathustra. 27. The Virtuous. With thunder and heavenly fireworks must one speak to indolent and somnolent senses. But beauty's voice speaketh gently, it appealeth only to the most awakened souls. Gently vibrated and laughed unto me today my buckler, it was beauty's holy laughing and thrilling. At you, ye virtuous ones, laughed my beauty today, and thus came its voice unto me, they want to be paid besides. Ye want to be paid besides, ye virtuous ones, you want reward for virtue, and heaven for earth, and eternity for your today. And now ye upbraid me for teaching that there is no reward giver nor paymaster, and verily I do not even teach that virtue is its own reward. Ah, this is my sorrow. Into the basis of things have reward and punishment been insinuated, and now even into the basis of your souls, ye virtuous ones. But like the snout of the boar shall my word grub up the basis of your souls. A plowshare will I be called by you. All the secrets of your heart shall be brought to light, and when ye lie in the sun, grubbed up and broken, then will also your falsehood be separated from your truth. For this is your truth. Ye are too pure for the filth of the words, vengeance, punishment, recompense, retribution. Ye love your virtue as a mother loveth her child. But when did one hear of a mother wanting to be paid for her love? It is your dearest self, your virtue. The ring's thirst is in you. To reach itself again struggleth every ring, and turneth itself. And like the star that goeth out, so is every work of your virtue. Ever is its light on its way and travelling, and when will it cease to be on its way? Thus is the light of your virtue still on its way, even when its work is done. Be it forgotten and dead, still its ray of light liveth and travelleth. That your virtue is yourself and not an outward thing, a skin or a cloak, that is the truth from the basis of your souls, ye virtuous ones. But sure enough, there are those to whom virtue meaneth writhing under the lash, and ye have hearkened too much unto their crying. And others are there who call virtue the slothfulness of their vices, and when once their hatred and jealousy relax the limbs, their justice becometh lively and rubbeth its sleepy eyes. And others are there who are drawn downwards, their devils draw them. But the more they sink, the more ardently gloweth their eye, and the longing for their God. Ah, their crying also hath reached your ears, ye virtuous ones. What I am not, that is God to me and virtue. And others are there who go along heavily and creakingly, like carts taking stones downhill. They talk much of dignity and virtue. Their drag they call virtue. And others are there who are like 8-day clocks when wound up. They tick and want people to call ticking virtue. Verily, in those have I mine amusement. Wherever I find such clocks, I shall wind them up with my mockery, and they shall even whir thereby. And others are proud of their modicum of righteousness, and for the sake of it do violence to all things, so that the world is drowned in their unrighteousness. Ah, how ineptly cometh the word virtue out of their mouth! And when they say, I am just, it always soundeth like, I am just revenged. With their virtues they want to scratch out the eyes of their enemies, and they elevate themselves only that they may lower others. And again there are those who sit in their swamp and speak thus from among the bulrushes, virtue, that is to sit quietly in the swamp. We bite no one, and go out of the way of him who would bite, and in all matters we have the opinion that is given us. And again there are those who love attitudes, and think that virtue is a sort of attitude. Their knees continually adore, and their hands are eulogies of virtue, but their heart knoweth naught thereof. And again there are those who regard it as virtue to say, virtue is necessary, but after all they believe only that policemen are necessary. And many a one who cannot see men's loftiness calleth it virtue to see their baseness far too well. Thus calleth he his evil eye virtue. And some want to be edified and raised up, and call it virtue. And others want to be cast down, and likewise call it virtue. And thus do almost all think that they participate in virtue, and at least every one claimeth to be an authority on good and evil. But Zarathustra came not to say unto all those liars and fools, what do ye know of virtue? What could ye know of virtue? But that ye, my friends, might become weary of the old words which ye have learned from the fools and liars. That ye might become weary of the words reward, retribution, punishment, righteous vengeance. That ye might become weary of saying that an action is good is because it is unselfish. Ah, my friends, that your very self be in your action as the mother is in the child, let that be your formula of virtue. Verily I have taken from you 100 formulae, and your virtue's favourite playthings, and now ye upbraid me as children upbraid. They played by the sea, then came there a wave and swept their playthings into the deep, and now do they cry. But the same wave shall bring them new playthings, and spread before them new speckled shells. Thus will they be comforted, and like them shall ye also, my friends, have your comforting and new speckled shells. Thus spake Zarathustra. 28. The Rabble. Life is a well of delight, but where the rabble also drink, there all fountains are poisoned. To everything cleanly am I well disposed, but I hate to see the grinning mouths and the thirst of the unclean. They cast their eye down into the fountain, and now glanceth up to me their odious smile out of the fountain. The holy water have they poisoned with their lustfulness, and when they called their filthy dreams delight, then poisoned they also the words. Indignant becometh the flame when they put their damp hearts to the fire. The spirit itself bubbleth and smoketh when the rabble approach the fire. Mawkish and overmellow becometh the fruit in their hands. Unsteady and withered at the top doth their look make the fruit tree. And many a one who hath turned away from life hath only turned away from the rabble. He hated to share with them fountain, flame, and fruit. And many a one who hath gone into the wilderness and suffered thirst with beasts of prey disliked only to sit at the cistern with filthy camel drivers. And many a one who hath come along as a destroyer and as a hailstorm to all cornfields wanted merely to put his foot into the jaws of the rabble and thus stop their throat. And it is not the mouthful which hath most choked me, to know that life itself requireth enmity and death and torture crosses. But I asked once, and suffocated almost with my question, what? Is the rabble also necessary for life? Are poisoned fountains necessary, and stinking fires, and filthy dreams, and maggots in the bread of life? Not my hatred, but my loathing gnawed hungrily at my life. Ah! Oft-times became I weary of spirit, when I found even the rabble spiritual. And on the rulers turned I my back, when I saw what they now call ruling, to traffic and bargain for power with the rabble. Amongst peoples of a strange language did I dwell, with stopped ears, so that the language of their trafficking might remain strange unto me, and their bargaining for power. And holding my nose, I went morosely through all yesterdays and todays, verily badly smell all yesterdays and todays of the scribbling rabble. Like a cripple become deaf and blind and dumb, thus have I lived long, that I might not live with the power rabble, the scribe rabble, and the pleasure rabble. Toilsomely did my spirit mount stairs, and cautiously. Arms of delight were its refreshment. On the staff did life creep along with the blind one. What hath happened unto me? How have I freed myself from loathing? Who hath rejuvenated mine eye? How have I flown to the height where no rabble any longer sit at the wells? Did my loathing itself create for me wings and fountain divining powers? Verily to the loftiest height had I to fly, to find again the well of delight. Oh, I have found it, my brethren. Here on the loftiest height bubbleth up for me the well of delight, and there is a life at whose waters none of the rabble drink with me. Almost too violently dost thou flow for me, thou fountain of delight, and often emptiest thou the goblet again in wanting to fill it. And yet must I learn to approach thee more modestly. Far too violently doth my heart still flow towards thee. My heart on which my summer burneth, my short, hot, melancholy, over-happy summer, how my summer heart longeth for thy coolness. Past the lingering distress of my spring, past the wickedness of my snowflakes in June, summer have I become entirely, and summer noontide. A summer on the loftiest height, with cold fountains and blissful stillness. Oh, come, my friends, that the stillness may become more blissful. For this is our height and our home. Too high and steep do we here dwell for all uncleanly ones and their thirst. Cast but your pure eyes into the well of my delight, my friends. How could it become turbid thereby? It shall laugh back to you with its purity. On the tree of the future build we our nest. Eagles shall bring us lone ones food in their beaks. Verily no food of which the impure could be fellow partakers. Fire would they think they devoured and burn their mouths. Verily no abodes do we here keep ready for the impure. An ice cave to their bodies would our happiness be, and to their spirits. And as strong winds will we live above them, neighbours to the eagles, neighbours to the snow, neighbours to the sun. Thus live the strong winds. And like a wind will I one day blow amongst them, and with my spirit take the breath from their spirit. Thus willeth my future. Verily a strong wind is Zarathustra to all low places, and this counsel counselleth he to his enemies, and to whatever spitteth and speweth, take care not to spit against the wind. Thus spake Zarathustra. 29. The Tarantulas. Lo, this is the tarantula's den. Wouldst thou see the tarantula itself? Here hangeth its web. Touch this, so that it may tremble. There cometh the tarantula willingly. Welcome, tarantula. Black on thy back is thy triangle and symbol, and I know also what is in thy soul. Revenge is in thy soul. Wherever thou bitest, there ariseth black scab. With revenge thy poison maketh the soul giddy. Thus do I speak unto you in parable, ye who make the soul giddy, ye preachers of equality. Tarantulas are ye unto me, and secretly revengeful ones. But I will soon bring your hiding places to the light, therefore do I laugh in your face, my laughter of the height. Therefore do I tear at your web, that your rage may lure you out of your den of lies, and that your revenge may leap forth from behind your word justice. Because for man to be redeemed from revenge, that is for me the bridge to the highest hope and a rainbow after long storms. Otherwise, however, would the tarantulas have it. Let it be very justice for the world to become full of the storms of our vengeance. Thus do they talk to one another. Vengeance will we use, and insult against all who are not like us. Thus do the tarantula hearts pledge themselves. And will to equality, that itself shall henceforth be the name of virtue, and against all that hath power will we raise an outcry. Ye preachers of equality, the tyrant frenzy of impotence crieth thus in you for equality. Your most secret tyrant longings disguise themselves thus in virtue words. Fretted conceit and suppressed envy, perhaps your father's conceit and envy, in you break they forth as flame and frenzy of vengeance. What the father hath hid cometh out in the son. And oft have I found in the Son the Father's revealed secret. Inspired ones they resemble, but it is not the heart that inspireth them, but vengeance. And when they become subtle and cold, it is not spirit, but envy that maketh them so. Their jealousy leadeth them also into thinkers' paths, and this is the sign of their jealousy. They always go too far. So that their fatigue hath at last to go to sleep on the snow. In all their lamentations soundeth vengeance, in all their eulogies is maleficence, and being judge seemeth to them bliss. But thus do I counsel you, my friends, distrust all in whom the impulse to punish is powerful. They are people of bad race and lineage. Out of their countenances peer the hangman and the sleuth-hound. Distrust all those who talk much of their justice. Verily, in their souls, not only honey is lacking. And when they call themselves the good and just, forget not that for them to be Pharisees, nothing is lacking but power. My friends, I will not be mixed up and confounded with others. There are those who preach my doctrine of life, and are at the same time preachers of equality and tarantulas. That they speak in favor of life, though they sit in their den, these poison spiders, and withdrawn from life, is because they would thereby do injury. To those would they thereby do injury who have power at present, for with those the preaching of death is still most at home. Were it otherwise, then would the tarantulas teach otherwise, and they themselves were formerly the best world maligners and heretic burners. With these preachers of equality will I not be mixed up and confounded, for thus speaketh justice unto me. Men are not equal. And neither shall they become so. What would be my love to the Superman if I spake otherwise? On 1,000 bridges and piers shall they throng to the future, and always shall there be more war and inequality among them. Thus doth my great love make me speak. Inventors of figures and phantoms shall they be in their hostilities, and with those figures and phantoms shall they yet fight with each other the supreme fight. Good and evil, and rich and poor, and high and low, and all names of values, weapons shall they be, and sounding signs that life must again and again surpass itself. Aloft will it build itself with columns and stairs. Life itself into remote distances would it gaze, and out towards blissful beauties. Therefore doth it require elevation. And because it requireth elevation, therefore doth it require steps, and variants of steps and climbers. To rise striveth life, and in rising to surpass itself. And just behold, my friends, here where the tarantula's den is, riseth aloft an ancient temple's ruins. Just behold it with enlightened eyes. Verily, he who here towered aloft his thoughts in stone knew as well as the wisest ones about the secret of life, that there is struggle and inequality even in beauty, and war for power and supremacy. That doth he here teach us in the plainest parable. How divinely do vault and arch here contrast in the struggle, how with light and shade they strive against each other, the divinely striving ones. Thus, steadfast and beautiful, let us also be enemies, my friends. Divinely will we strive against one another. Alas, there hath the tarantula bit me myself, mine old enemy. Divinely steadfast and beautiful, it hath bit me on the finger. Punishment must there be, and justice. So thinketh it. Not gratuitously shall he here sing songs in honour of enmity. Yea, it hath revenged itself, and alas, now will it make my soul also dizzy with revenge. That I may not turn dizzy, however, bind me fast, my friends, to this pillar. Rather will I be a pillar saint than a whirl of vengeance. Verily no cyclone or whirlwind is Zarathustra, and if he be a dancer, he is not at all a tarantula dancer. Thus spake Zarathustra. 30. The Famous Wise Ones. The people have ye served, and the people's superstition, not the truth, all ye famous wise ones, and just on that account did they pay you reverence. And on that account also did they tolerate your unbelief, because it was a pleasantry and a bypath for the people. Thus doth the master give free scope to his slaves, and even enjoyeth their presumptuousness. But he who is hated by the people, as the wolf by the dogs, is the free spirit, the enemy of fetters, the non-adorer, the dweller in the woods. To hunt him out of his lair, that was always called sense of right by the people. On him do they still hound their sharpest-toothed dogs. For there the truth is, where the people are. Woe, woe to the seeking ones! Thus hath it echoed through all time. Your people would ye justify in their reverence, that called ye will to truth, ye famous wise ones. And your heart hath always said to itself, From the people have I come, from thence came to me also the voice of God. Stiff-necked and artful, like the ass, have ye always been as the advocates of the people. And many a powerful one who wanted to run well with the people hath harnessed in front of his horses a donkey, a famous wise man. And now, ye famous wise ones, I would have you finally throw off entirely the skin of the lion. The skin of the beast of prey, the speckled skin, and the dishevelled locks of the investigator, the searcher, and the conqueror. Ah, for me to learn to believe in your conscientiousness, you would first have to break your venerating will. Conscientious, so call I him who goeth into God-forsaken wildernesses, and hath broken his venerating heart. In the yellow sands and burnt by the sun, he doubtless peereth thirstily at the isles rich in fountains, where life reposeth under shady trees. But his thirst doth not persuade him to become like those comfortable ones, for where there are oases, there are also idols. Hungry, fierce, lonesome, God-forsaken, so doth the lion will wish itself. Free from the happiness of slaves, redeemed from deities and adorations, fearless and fear-inspiring, grand and lonesome, so is the will of the conscientious. In the wilderness have ever dwelt the conscientious, the free spirits, as lords of the wilderness. But in the cities dwell the well-foddered, famous wise ones, the draft beasts. For always do they draw, as asses, the people's carts. Not that I, on that account, upbraid them, but serving ones do they remain, and harnessed ones, even though they glitter in golden harness. And often have they been good servants, and worthy of their hire. For thus saith virtue, If thou must be a servant, seek him unto whom thy service is most useful. The spirit and virtue of thy master shall advance by thou being his servant, thus wilt thou thyself advance with his spirit and virtue. And verily, ye famous wise ones, ye servants of the people, ye yourselves have advanced with the people's spirit and virtue, and the people by you. To your honour do I say it. But the people ye remain for me, even with your virtues, the people with purblind eyes, the people who know not what spirit is. Spirit is life which itself cutteth into life, by its own torture doth it increase its own knowledge. Did ye know that before? And the spirit's happiness is this, to be anointed and consecrated with tears as a sacrificial victim. Did ye know that before? And the blindness of the blind one, and his seeking and groping, shall yet testify to the power of the sun into which he hath gazed. Did ye know that before? And with mountains shall the discerning one learn to build. It is a small thing for the spirit to remove mountains. Did ye know that before? Ye know only the sparks of the spirit, but ye do not see the anvil which it is, and the cruelty of its hammer. Verily ye know not the spirit's pride, but still less could ye endure the spirit's humility, should it ever want to speak. And never yet could ye cast your spirit into a pit of snow, ye are not hot enough for that. Thus are ye unaware also of the delight of its coldness. In all respects, however, ye make too familiar with the spirit, and out of wisdom have ye often made an almshouse and a hospital for bad poets. Ye are not eagles, thus have ye never experienced the happiness of the alarm of the spirit, and he who is not a bird should not camp above abysses. Ye seem to me lukewarm ones, but coldly floweth all deep knowledge. Ice cold are the innermost wells of the spirit, a refreshment to hot hands and handlers. Respectable do ye there stand, and stiff, and with straight backs, ye famous wise ones. No strong wind or will impelleth you. Have ye ne'er seen a sail crossing the sea, rounded and inflated, and trembling with the violence of the wind? Like the sail trembling with the violence of the spirit doth my wisdom cross the sea, my wild wisdom. But ye servants of the people, ye famous wise ones, how could ye go with me? Thus spake Zarathustra. 31. The Night Song. 'Tis night, now do all gushing fountains speak louder, and my soul also is a gushing fountain. 'Tis night, now only do all songs of the loving ones awake, and my soul also is the song of a loving one. Something unappeased, unappeasable, is within me, it longeth to find expression. A craving for love is within me, which speaketh itself the language of love. Light am I, ah, that I were night, but it is my lonesomeness to be begirt with light. Ah, that I were dark and nightly, how would I suck at the breasts of light? And you yourselves would I bless, ye twinkling starlets and glow-worms aloft, and would rejoice in the gifts of your light. But I live in mine own light, I drink again into myself the flames that break forth from me. I know not the happiness of the receiver, and oft have I dreamt that stealing must be more blessed than receiving. It is my poverty that my hand never ceaseth bestowing. It is mine envy that I see waiting eyes, and the brightened nights of longing. O, the misery of all bestowers! O, the darkening of my sun! O, the craving to crave! O, the violent hunger in satiety! They take from me, but do I yet touch their soul? There is a gap twixt giving and receiving, and the smallest gap hath finally to be bridged over. A hunger ariseth out of my beauty. I should like to injure those I illumine. I should like to rob those I have gifted. Thus do I hunger for wickedness. Withdrawing my hand when another hand already stretcheth out to it, hesitating like the cascade which hesitateth even in its leap, thus do I hunger for wickedness. Such revenge doth mine abundance think of, such mischief welleth out of my lonesomeness. My happiness in bestowing died in bestowing, my virtue became weary of itself by its abundance. He who ever bestoweth is in danger of losing his shame. To him who ever dispenseth, the hand and heart become callous by very dispensing. Mine eye no longer overfloweth for the shame of suppliants, my hand hath become too hard for the trembling of filled hands. Whence have gone the tears of mine eye, and the down of my heart? O, the lonesomeness of all bestowers! O, the silence of all shining ones! Many suns circle in desert space. To all that is dark do they speak with their light, but to me they are silent. O, this is the hostility of light to the shining one. Unpityingly doth it pursue its course. Unfair to the shining one in its innermost heart, cold to the suns, thus travelleth every sun. Like a storm do the suns pursue their courses, that is their travelling. Their inexorable will do they follow, that is their coldness. O, ye only is it, ye dark nightly ones, that extract warmth from the shining ones. O, ye only drink milk and refreshment from the light's udders. Ah! There is ice around me, my hand burneth with the iciness. Ah, there is thirst in me, it panteth after your thirst. 'Tis night, alas, that I have to be light, and thirst for the nightly, and lonesomeness. 'Tis night, now doth my longing break forth in me as a fountain, for speech do I long. 'Tis night, now do all gushing fountains speak louder, and my soul also is a gushing fountain. 'Tis night, now do all songs of loving ones awake, and my soul also is the song of a loving one. Thus sang Zarathustra. 32. The Dance Song. One evening went Zarathustra and his disciples through the forest, and when he sought for a well, lo, he lighted upon a green meadow peacefully surrounded with trees and bushes, where maidens were dancing together. As soon as the maidens recognized Zarathustra, they ceased dancing. Zarathustra, however, approached them with friendly mien and spake these words. "Cease not your dancing, ye lovely maidens. No gain-spoiler hath come to you with evil eye, no enemy of maidens. God's advocate am I with the devil. He, however, is the spirit of gravity. How could I, ye light-footed ones, be hostile to divine dances, or to maidens' feet with fine ankles? To be sure I am a forest, and a knight of dark trees, but he who is not afraid of my darkness will find banks full of roses under my cypresses. And even the little god may he find who is dearest to maidens. Beside the well lieth he quietly with closed eyes. Verily in broad daylight did he fall asleep, the sluggard. Had he perhaps chased butterflies too much? Upbraid me not, ye beautiful dancers, when I chasten the little god somewhat. He will cry, certainly, and weep, but he is laughable even when weeping. And with tears in his eyes shall he ask you for a dance, and I myself will sing a song to his dance. A dance song and satire on the spirit of gravity, my supremest, powerfulest devil, who is said to be lord of the world. And this is the song that Zarathustra sang when Cupid and the maidens danced together. Of late did I gaze into thine eye, O life, and into the unfathomable did I there seem to sink. But thou pulledst me out with a golden angle. Derisively didst thou laugh when I called the unfathomable. Such is the language of all fish, saidst thou. What they do not fathom is unfathomable. But changeable am I only, and wild, and altogether a woman, and no virtuous one. Though I be called by you men the profound one, or the faithful one, the eternal one, the mysterious one. But ye men endow us always with your own virtues. Alas, ye virtuous ones! Thus did she laugh, the unbelievable one. But never do I believe her and her laughter when she speaketh evil of herself. And when I talked face to face with my wild wisdom, she said to me angrily, "Thou willest, thou cravest, thou lovest. On that account alone dost thou praise life." Then had I almost answered indignantly and told the truth to the angry one. And one cannot answer more indignantly than when one telleth the truth to one's wisdom. For thus do things stand with us three. In my heart do I love only life, and verily most when I hate her. But that I am fond of wisdom, and often too fond, is because she remindeth me very strongly of life. She hath her eye, her laugh, and even her golden angle-rod. Am I responsible for it that both are so alike? And when once life asked me, "Who is she then, this wisdom?" then said I eagerly, "Ah, yes, wisdom." One thirsteth for her, and is not satisfied. One looketh through veils, one graspeth through nets. Is she beautiful? What do I know? But the oldest carps are still lured by her. Changeable is she and wayward. Often have I seen her bite her lip and pass the comb against the grain of her hair. Perhaps she is wicked and false, and altogether a woman. But when she speaketh ill of herself, just then doth she seduce most. When I had said this unto life, then laughed she maliciously and shut her eyes. "Of whom dost thou speak?" said she. "Perhaps of me? And if thou wert right, is it proper to say that in such wise to my face? But now, pray, speak also of thy wisdom." "Ah, and now hast thou again opened thine eyes, O beloved life, and into the unfathomable have I again seemed to sink." Thus sang Zarathustra. But when the dance was over and the maidens had departed, he became sad. "The sun hath been long set," said he at last. "The meadow is damp, and from the forest cometh coolness. An unknown presence is about me and gazeth thoughtfully." "What? Thou livest still, Zarathustra?" "Why? Wherefore? Whereby? Whither? Where? How? Is it not folly still to live?" "Ah, my friends, the evening is it which thus interrogateth in me. Forgive me my sadness. Evening hath come on. Forgive me that evening hath come on. Thus sang Zarathustra. 33. The Grave Song. Yonder is the grave island, the silent isle, yonder also are the graves of my youth. Thither will I carry an evergreen wreath of life.